Bees, I've been wanting to get this off the ground for a little over a year now. The circumstances presented itself where it doesn't have to be perfect. I finally got to do the first interview I'm going to have here, and this is going to be all over ESPN. How you doing, brother?
I'm good, man. It's good to see your face. It's been a while.
What's life in Houston like for you right now?
Man, it's cool. You know, like I was, you know, in Houston, six years? So I made it my home. You know, I enjoy the city. You know, I enjoy the people. So I'm gonna stay unless I have to move.
You're in Houston right now.
Yeah, I'm in Houston right now. Yeah.
Considering everything that's going on right now, what's Houston like?
I mean, obviously, you know, it's a little bit of panic. You know, I'm in the burbs. You know, so obviously, all that toilet paper and all that, you know, all the, you know, disinfectant stuff, you know, antibacterial things. That's all gone. There's no more on the shelves. But it's kind of chill, you know, in my area, in my county, there's only been, I think, 3 or 4, outbreaks. So it's not as bad as, you know, obviously as other cities and other places. So it's not, you know, not too bad. But at the same time, I'm taking precaution. I'm staying inside, not going outside and doing my part. So
let's focus on something positive. Obviously, we want to be there and show solidarity with everybody, but we want to brighten up everybody's day and talk about something other than what's going on. Let's talk about some football, man. You're a GOAT in this. You're a U.S. men's national team legend. Your resume speaks for itself. I have to be honest with people. I sent you a mini rundown of what it's going to be like. And in the rundown, I had, you know, DeMarcus Beasley over 400 games and in 17-year career. And you corrected me. That's fine, but it's over 500 games in career.
Exactly. Hey, we might as well get it right. We talking, might as well get it right.
All right. Let's go into DeMarcus Beasley and the GOAT that is DeMarcus Beasley, where it all started. Fort Wayne, Indiana. Take me through. What's it like? I've never been to Indiana. I've never been to Fort Wayne. For somebody who's not from there, what was life growing up for you?
You know, it's the, you know, suburban life, small life. You know, I think back then, you know, obviously 30-something years ago, it was maybe 250,000 people, I think, something like that. You know, obviously it's grown since then, but it's just you know, one big suburb, basically. Slow, you know, hardworking families. Just, you know, everyone trying, you know, doing their part, you know, in the community a lot. It's just a small town, you know, small town city, basically.
So how does DeMarcus Beasley from Fort Wayne get into football, get into soccer?
I mean, I don't have any, you know, no history of soccer in my family, you know, before myself and my brother. My dad played, you know, football and basketball. My mom did a little bit of track, you know, when she was in college. In high school. But that was it, you know. And basically my dad just wanted us to be active and you know, get out of the house and, you know, try to pick up sports and just be, you know, sporty kids. That's it, you know. And he brought a ball home one day, and when I was about 5, my brother was, you know, 6, 7, something like that. And then that's kind of all she wrote.
So your brother played as well, Jamal. Hey, who was the better player?
Jamar.
Who's the better player between you two?
I
played indoor against him.
Yeah, you did? Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, my 1,000,000% my brother. Anybody will tell you that. My brother was the – you know how every, you know, small town has that one star player in the city that everyone, you know, looks at and everyone's like, oh, man, he's the – but my brother had basketball and he had soccer. He even played a little bit of football too. You know, he was a kicker and, you know, he did a little bit of quarterback. So my brother was that guy. He was that dude in high school and middle school growing up. So my brother was 10 times better than I was when I was younger.
So what was that like for you to have that kind of role model and your brother kind of be in that elevated status and you trying to come up through the ranks?
Yeah, man, for me, to be honest, I don't think without my brother, I wouldn't have been the player that I am today. You know, and that's real. And I'm not just trying to say that because of my brother, but, you know, I got that. You know, you can't teach competitiveness. You know, you can't teach that. Either you have it or you don't. You know, you like compete or you don't, you know. And I had that when I was younger, you know, and that was come from my brother. You know, I idolized him, but at the same time, I had the mentality that, you know, what he could do, I tried to do. You know, I never lived up to that when I was younger. But, you know, he pushed me to be better. You know what I'm saying? And I had that older brother look up to and trying to get to his level. And I always wanted to win. You know, I was a scrappy, scrawny little kid, you know, always, you know, fighting at his tails. So that's, like I said, for me, if I didn't have my brother, a lot of this probably wouldn't have that spirit that I have inside me when I play football. I wouldn't have that.
When did you realize that you were good, that you could maybe make something out of this, maybe make it a profession?
Oh, a profession? I mean, obviously, when you're a kid, you know, you know that, you know, you have some talent, you know. But I was from Indiana. I never knew there was a whole world, and you know, people from California, from New York, you know, playing the same, playing soccer. You know, you don't think that when you're. You don't think about that when you're a kid. You know, I was happy playing in my little Pepsi League, you know, playing in my travel team. And we traveled to different places and everything like that. But I think for me, once I really knew that I could try to make a go at this was my first ODP camp. Don't ask me the year because I really don't remember what year. I think it was a U14 age, I want to say.
Oh, so back in the 70s.
Yeah, back in the 60s. Hey, you're older than me. Don't forget about that. Something like that, you know. And I think that's when I first was like, okay, I'm all right. You know, I could see different, you know, players in my area. And funny story, I didn't make my state team the first year. I got cut. They said I was too small. I got cut. Yeah. My first time I tried for ODP, I got cut. I cried in the car.
What did you tell you? The feedback was?
I was too small.
That's it?
That was it.
That was it? You were too small?
I was too small.
How were you?
And everyone was like, I can't believe that, because I was, you know, that I was the most, you know, skilled. I was, you know, the player back then in Indiana. I got cut.
Wait, so you're the best player in Indiana, the most skillful player. Tactically, you probably were had enough at that age where you knew what was going on, and they just said you were too small.
Yeah, I was too small. So, yeah, I was too small. And I was literally, you know, back then, that's why they called me Jitterbug. I was dribbling around. I was dribbling around everybody. I didn't like to pass as much, you know. So, they cut me. I didn't – my first ever trying to make ODP, I got cut.
Did that stay with you, that saying in your mentality, in your psyche, that you're too small? Did that stay with you growing up?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But catch the joke, though. So, you know, obviously I missed – that was my age group. So that same year, you know, I went up an age group because I was like, no, this is not right. You know, so I was like, I can't just, you know, just stop, you know, like, you know, this and, you know, I don't believe what they say, blah, blah, blah. So I went up an age group and I made that state team.
Wait.
If I'm lying, I'm telling you.
How does this work, though? If I'm like a regional director and I see that this kid gets cut from one age group, but another age group takes him, I'm scratching my head and I'm asking questions.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know what happened, I don't know how I got cut. I don't know how it happened, but yeah. So that same year I went up an age group and I made that state team and I tried to make that regional team, but I got cut then. And at the regional, you know, at that age, I was, you know, obviously they were, you know, too fast and too big and I couldn't really keep up, you know. So I did get cut from, you know, after that state team, I got cut after that. But yeah, I went up an age group and made that state team. I could have made my own age group state team, but I made a year up. So that was how I kind of started, you know, and with the ODP and, you know, getting into soccer.
All right. So you did the ODP, different age group. You proved that person wrong. And then in comes the IMG Bradenton Academy. For those of people who don't know, this is pretty much a residency program, the very first generation residency program. So it's you live and you breathe soccer with a bunch of other kids like the rest of the world has.
Right.
What Clásicas Academies, whatever you want to call it, that's what it was, correct? Best players in the nation.
Right, that's what it was. You know, we had a group. It was the U15 age, kind of U15, U16 age national team. And, you know, obviously U.S. soccer had this whole, you know, with the 2010 World Cup, where they're going to be like our group, then maybe win the World Cup.
That was a project.
Project 2010. Win the World Cup, so it was our group. Yeah, winning the World Cup. You know, so we're going to, you know, try something different, you know, try to, you know, make basically a living and have us, you know, basically try to be like the European giants, the Brazilians and all that stuff, and, you know, live, eat, and breathe soccer every day. Go to school, train every day, not just, you know, you train for a couple of weeks and you go back to your club or, you know, this and that. So we're trying to do some – U.S. soccer, we're trying to do some, you know, outside the box. And obviously they had to get everyone's parents, you know, permission to do that. And obviously everyone was like, yeah, we want to do it. We want to live together. We want to play. It sounded like the coolest thing in the whole world, you know, because you get to live and breathe.
Who are some of the players we might know?
Oh, you guys know all of them. I mean, Landon was the biggest, obviously the big name. Landon, Gooch, Bobby Convy, Kyle Beckerman, who's still playing. You know, Beckerman, Bex is still there. George Sela, DJ Countess, the goalkeeper, Nelson Aquari, you know, as our captain.
Seth Tremblay there as well.
Seth Tremblay.
That's a good generation of players. Some of those players had, you know, long domestic careers.
They did. We had a really good
group. Walk me through the day. What was it like? What was your first experience in Bradenton, like the academy?
I mean, for me, I was homesick. Because, you know, we were supposed to start in January, you know, and I went in August because my high school was kind of tripping at the time. And it was like, oh, well, we can't have your transcripts. We can't, you know, kind of do them halfway through the season, halfway through the year. You need to, you know, if you really want to do this, then you got to, you know, we're going to have to start new. So you got to go from August until May through the school season. And that's what I did. So I went early. So I kind of got a little taste of what it'd be like before everyone else got there. You know, everyone's supposed to be there in January. I was homesick. You know, the first, I think, 4 or 5 weekends, I went home. I went straight home. I went to school Monday through Friday, obviously, and then Friday night, my mom got me a flight, and I flew back home, and then I flew back on Sunday.
What was it about it that made it, you just missed home, or did you?
Yeah, I mean, I was a 15-year-old kid.
Adjusting, what was
it? Yeah, because I was by myself. You know, I was living in the dorms where we were going to be at. You know, living with people that I didn't know. Alex Yee was there as well. He came early too. It was
right.
What's that?
Did he go to UCLA?
Yeah, UCLA. He went to UCLA. Yeah, and it was difficult. You know, I mean, I was on my own. You know, I had my boy with me, but I was on my own. So it was tough being away from your family at such a young age. And, you know, it was difficult.
Well, so no doubt. But that kind of set the groundwork. And then in comes the 1999, you know, U-20 World Cup in New Zealand. And one of the best generation of players that we've had at the youth level. You guys actually made a deep run. Not only did you make a deep run, Landon was voted Golden Ball, the best player in the tournament, and you were the Silver Ball, the second best player of the tournament.
Yeah.
Tell me about that experience.
Yeah, man, it was the whole experience was great. You know, we had such a good group. You know, I don't know if you heard stories about, you know, that U-17 team, 99. It was special, you know. And it wasn't just because, you know, it was, you know, the Project 2010.
Right,
you know,
I'm sorry, U-17 team, you're correct.
Yeah. It wasn't that. We were just going to – U.S. Soccer put it on our shoulders to win the World Cup. Like, we actually thought we were, you know, we actually thought we were going to go through the U-17s, U-20s, Olympics, go to the World Cup 2010 and win it, you know, because we were beating the teams, you know, the Englands, the Brazil, the Germanys, the Argentina. We were beating those teams at our age, you know.
Do you still remember those players and those teams? Any of them become big players?
That I played against?
Yes.
I mean, a lot. Probably the two biggest ones was from Saviola.
Yeah.
Yeah, Saviola from Argentina. He was in our age group.
He played in Benfica.
Benfica.
Barcelona, River.
When we played Ghana, the guy from Chelsea, he's going to kill it because we're pretty good acquaintances.
That's a ridiculous player.
Exactly, you know, so like players like that, you know, that they went through the same ranks, you know, they're that kind of same age group, and we went up and they made the national team as well. So, but no, we thought that we were going to win. We were beating MLS teams at 16 years old, you know, that's who we were playing against. You know, that's who John Mellinger was like, okay, if y'all really want to scrap and, you know, be good and show how good you are, you guys need to, you know, step up your game. We could, because we were no disrespect, you know, but when we were playing college teams, it wasn't a contest.
Right.
You know, we were, you know, cocky little kids, but we were good. We backed it up with how we played.
You were beating MLS teams. What MLS teams did you guys beat that year?
We beat the Tampa Bay Mutiny. We beat, people are going to kill me if I say, I think we drew DC United. That's when they had, you know, Echeverries and
Jaime Moreno.
But the thing was, I think they did end up beating us because they played their second string against our starters. And I think we were winning I think we were winning like maybe like 1-0 or 2-0. And then that's when they brought Moreno, they brought Tony Sana, and they brought Echeverry in at halftime. And then I think that was I think they ended up winning like 4-2 or 4-3 or something like that. But we got respect. I mean, right. they kicked us because obviously, you know, like I said, we were a bit cocky, you know. So, you know, Beckerman was run off at the mouth, you know. It doesn't sound right, right? Kyle, you know, he was talking smack. You know, we all were sometimes a little bit, you know. And, you know, and when the team really turned it on, obviously, they you know, they kicked us, you know. And that's what it's supposed to be about.
Right, right. So you guys are beating grown men at this age. You had a great U-17 World Cup. Incomes. I guess, I don't know, you weren't part of the draft. You were just signed immediately to Major League Soccer. Right. Most people don't know this, but you were signed to the LA Galaxy, right?
Yeah. So I signed actually before that World Cup. You know, I signed before the U-17, so I was already signed. And, I got allocated to LA, you know.
But you never set foot in LA to be part of the Galaxy.
I did. I went because I was still in high school, you know, and my mom and dad wouldn't let me take my GED. So to everyone that has – there's a, you know – a rumor going around that I never finished high school. I did. I got my diploma. I walked with my class, all that.
But anyway, it sacrifices. I mean, obviously, yeah. You walked to your class, but did you go to homecoming or prom or any of that stuff?
I went to prom once. I did, but it's my junior prom. I wasn't able to go to right. My senior prom. So I went to the junior prom. But that's something that I signed, in 99. That summer, LA had me out. You know, and that's when, you know, they had like, you know, the Cienfuegos, Carlos Hermosillo, Kobe, Robert Frazier, Easy,
Ezra.
You know, huh. Ezra. They had, I mean, all these, you know, all the big names. Greg Vanney, you know, that's when, you know, back then.
Vanney, right?
Yeah, all those guys, you know. So obviously, you know, I just had turned 17 then when I went. And, it was a great experience, you know. I remember, and I don't think I've ever told Kobe this, but I remember walking into the locker room because they let me train. I went to LA, you know, they picked me up and, you know, they let me, go there for 2 weeks, meet the players, meet the, you know, Ziggy.
Where they used to train?
So what's that?
Where they train?
Where?
Yeah.
It was right outside the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, it was a baseball field, right?
It was a baseball field. Yeah, there you go. Yep, that was it. That was it. Right across. If you walked over. Yeah, I remember. And, so I remember the first day I walked in, I remember Kobe Jones. Obviously, he's big Kobe. You know, he was a man.
Dreadlocks.
He was a man back then. You know, dreadlocks, everything. And I remember walking in, and he was reading a newspaper. And I walked in, and then, you know, obviously, I can't remember the lady's name or the guy's name that, you know, introduced me to the whole team. And he literally just wrote down his paper and said, hey, put back his paper up. And then I was like, oh, well, all right. Thanks, Kobe. Appreciate it. And that was the first time I ever meeting Kobe. I'll never forget that. But at the end, obviously, you know, they're good teammates for those 2 weeks that I was there. You know, very they made me feel welcome. And I got to train and I got to be a part of one game. I was on the bench warming up for one game. Yeah, so I had my jersey. Because they actually had to ask MLS, am I eligible to play? And they're like, well, yeah, he signed, you know. And so Ziggy, you know, he put me on the bench. I didn't play. But there was one kid. Don't ask me who we played. I have no idea. I can't remember. but I remember warming up on the sideline. And then right after that, my 2 week stint, you know, was over. And then the next thing you know, I was getting traded.
All right, let's fast forward to Chicago. You're in Chicago, and Chicago in its first year was in its regular expansion team. I mean, you guys were pretty competitive.
Yeah.
You guys won everything.
Yeah.
Bob Bradley, you had some ridiculous players on that team. What was it? Peter Novak.
Lubos Kubik, Stoichkov. Uh-huh. But then we had the whole U.S. national team.
Jeff Marsh.
Yeah, no, we had Wolfie, we had Zach Thornton, we had Ante, we had Chris Armas, we had Diego Gutierrez, we had Dima Kovalenko.
Watch your ankles, eh?
Yeah, we had Dima. When I started kind of getting to the national team after my first year, it would be literally about eight of us flying because we were all on the national team. You know what I'm saying? That was great. That's how good our team was.
Right. So you guys won everything. You won the league. You won the Open Cup. Bob Bradley was the head coach back then. what was Bob Bradley like back then?
I mean, I think he was, you know, he's a straightforward guy. He's very, very organized, knows exactly, you know, how he wants to coach, how he wants each player to play. Everyone would know their roles in the team. He was hard, you know. You know, he had a certain standard that we had to, that he put from training to games to the way you live your life. It wasn't just about football. Everything had to be at a professional level. I mean, the way you eat, the way you take care of yourself, the way we train, you know, if it wasn't good enough, oh, you know it. You know, you definitely know it. You know, so he held us to a standard that we needed to, you know, to be at every day, but not just football, off the field as well, you know.
What does that do for you if you're a young kid, if you're 17 years old and you come to an environment where it's so structured on and off the field? What did that instill in you?
Yeah, it does wonders, man. I'm telling you. I was so lucky to be in that group, to be around those players, you know, because basically, you know, all the players that we had were internationals, you know, and all the players wanted to win, you know, and to have that mentality at a young age, to see what these guys go through every day in and out, how they train, you know, how they play games, what they're doing to take care of themselves. I think for me, it definitely depends on the situation that you're in at a young age. You know, if you're in that early and you see what it takes to win, you know, what these guys do to win every day, what it takes, you know, in training, you know, training at your best every single day. Having a coach like Bob that, you know, doesn't take any days off, you know. I mean, literally, we'll walk in for training and he'd already be there watching, you know, Barcelona against, you know, Real Madrid in 87.
Something like that today.
You know, and, you know, like it didn't stop. It didn't stop. He always wanted to, you know, reach another level. He got that one and reach another level, then reach another level, you know. So it was football all day. And have those players that I had with me on that team, you know, being internationals, already having won in the championship. And it can be easy, you know, when you have players at that high quality and they won a championship, you know, they won in 98 and they still somewhat had the same team. They could just be like, okay, yeah, we won it. We're good. We're done. No, they wanted more. You know, they wanted more. They wanted to win again and win again every day in training. Like, I would get kicked like you would not believe. CJ Brown, Frankie Klopas, and these are my boys. These are my guys. But Tommy Sohn, you know, oh my God, they would kick the living every day. Every day. But it made me tough.
They do that.
They wouldn't say nothing. They look at me on the ground and just keep playing. Just keep playing. I already had that toughness, you know, because right. at a young age, so I already had that. Like I could take a tackle, I could take, you know, a hit, a beating. But I think I got respect because I didn't talk. I shut my mouth and I just played. You know, I think I gained respect, you know, throughout that year I'm not just a scrawny kid that, you know, they sign, you know, to make headlines. Like, you know, this guy's a real deal. You know, right. Obviously I wasn't, you know, like the best player by far on that team. But they knew that, you know, this kid could be something special if he keeps his head down. That's what I did. I didn't talk back. I just played. I got up, you know, and I tried to do my part. And they knew that I was there to help the team.
It's funny you say that about keeping your head down, working and doing your part, because I remember in the latter stages of my career, and it's a good thing that the players nowadays have so much confidence. And they're obviously, honestly, they're a lot better than maybe our age group was.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
More advanced technically.
Skillful, yeah.
They're exposed to different things on YouTube where they can mimic players. They just tons of resources.
Right.
But maybe that gritty attitude, that gritty put your head down and work kind of personality is missing today.
Yeah. Oh, no, 100%. You know, 100%. I spoke about it before. You know, like you said, whatever it is, that mentality part of it is different, you know. You know, you got, especially when I first came to Houston, you know, there was some young kids that were, you know, obviously training with the first team at, you know, sometimes. And, you know, obviously, yeah, they get attacked, you know, some of the older guys are getting a tackle and you know, but they get up and like, oh, hey, what are you doing? I'm like, man, you are 17 years old. Just take it and keep playing.
Exactly.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like they would feel like they were better than the older guys.
Entitled.
They were young. Yeah. They were young and they were talented and this is a whole new world. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like, you know, back in the old days. And I get that. That's fine. You know, times change. I understand that. But the mentality part of it shouldn't change. You know, you should, for one, respect, obviously, the players that have been there before you and paved the way. But at the same time, just, you know, it should be about, you know, football. That's it. Get up, play. You're going to get kicked because you're young. And that's what it is. That's what happened. You know what I'm saying? But don't sit there and talk back and think that, you know, you're better than everybody just because you're young and talented.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, and I hope players, the people who are listening to this, take that into account, you know, the young kids. Let's go back to a young and talented kid. I mean, the 2002 World Cup is right around the corner. You and Landon kind of came out of nowhere to make that national team.
Yeah.
Walk me through the process of you, the qualification process that is.
Yeah.
Were you part of that? How many games were you part of that? Did you see yourself even being in that radar?
I didn't, you know. I was on the edge. I was on the edge looking in, you know, for me. Landon was there. Landon was he had already been in camps. He was playing. He scored a couple goals for the national team before he got, you know, before he made the World Cup team.
He scored against Mexico in the debut.
Yeah, he scored against Mexico his first game, you know. And actually, our U-17 team was in the stands that game. So that was pretty cool, you know, to see our boys score. I mean, we went crazy. We went nuts, you know, to see him score his first goal. What's up?
What were you doing there?
We were training. We were training. And we were training at the same time in the national team. The full team was training. And obviously, you know, obviously we're going to go to the game because we were in LA as well. And, but yeah, to see him score, you know, we went absolutely nuts. You know, it was cool to see, you know, our boy, score at such a young age. But, so yeah, Landon was there. And so for me, I was part of that group that I was getting called in, but I wasn't making the final roster. So I was training with, you know, with the Kobe's and, you know, Ernie's and all those guys, but I wasn't making the final roster. You know, I remember, Bob was talking to Bruce Bob was talking to me and he said, Bruce, you know, I got a kid you need to look at. And Bruce was like, no, you know, not yet. You know, he's okay, but you know, I don't think he's at this level yet. And Bob, you know, he kept pushing Bruce to bring me in, to call me. He's like, Bruce, you know. So Bob was a big part of, you know, getting me to the national team as well. You know, he definitely was in Bruce's ear to take a look at me, you know. So
did he ever tell you what he saw in you that made him push Bruce so much?
Not really. I mean, you know, obviously we had our talks of what he thought about me as a player then, you know, but I know that I needed to, for me to be on that team and to play with that team, I needed to be a two-way player. And I said this in an interview before. I remember Bob telling me, because if people ever saw me at 16 years old, I never passed the ball. I never liked the pass. All I did was dribble. That's why they called me Jitterbug. I dribble. I love to dribble, you know? And I used my speed to get past people. My skill wasn't as good as other players, but my speed made up for it, you know? And Bob, you know, came up to me and told me, he's like, DeMarcus, you can't dribble yourself out of everything. You cannot dribble yourself out of every situation. Get your head up, play the ball. We're a team that likes the ball on the ground. So get your head up and play the ball. And that stuck to me, you know, just those little comments that he made. And obviously playing with the players that I did, it got me to actually understand the game. Not just, you know, oh, you want to dribble and do this and that, but actually got me to understand the game and actually look at it from a whole different perspective. And I was 17, 18 years old. You know, so just think that kind of knowledge you have from a coach, from the players that an 18-year-old kid got. You know, I got that from Bob, and that was pretty cool. So yeah, I didn't those couple of camps. I didn't make the final roster. You know, I felt that I should have, but I didn't. You know, so it just kept, you know, making me. I got a little taste of it, but I didn't get the, you know, the final reward, and so I wasn't really a part of the qualifying process. They had already qualified, and I went to the one game in Trinidad. There was the last game of the qualifying, game 10. And I ended up starting, but I ended up getting a concussion, knocked out.
Oh.
Yeah, right before halftime. Yeah, and I don't remember much of that game in my first start. Oh, in a qualifying match. I get taken off at halftime because, I got knocked unconscious.
So how did you end up making the team?
Gold Cup. That's back then when Gold Cup was in the winter, and it was in California. So the Gold Cup was in January, and that Gold Cup, you know, put myself in the driver's seat or in the talks of, you know, maybe making a World Cup team. I had literally, I'm not even lying. I didn't think I had no way in hell making the World Cup team 2002. You know, I knew I was there, but I really wasn't making camp. You know, I wasn't, getting to play, you know. And obviously I made my debut against China. But still, you know, I would come in, I was still coming to camps, but I really wasn't making a roster. Sometimes I did, sometimes I didn't. But the Gold Cup was really where I made a name for myself.
All right. So you make the World Cup team, you get the news. What's going through your mind? Do you get the gravity of the situation that it's a World Cup? When do you really realize where you're at? Walk me through this.
Oh, I did. I mean, I still remember in Chicago when Dave called me and said, "Hey, Beast, we're taking you to the World Cup." I was like, "Huh?" I was trying to half sleep. Yeah, I was kind of half sleep. I was like, "What?" He's like, "Yeah, we're taking you." I was like, "Oh no, I couldn't believe it." I just kept saying, "Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you." I couldn't believe it. You know, kid from Fort Wayne, Indiana, you know, that didn't think he had a chance of making a World Cup team, and he did, you know, and I did have a good tournament, you know, playing against those teams, you know, against Jamaica and Holland, you know, those teams are really, I really, you know, put myself, in the talks of, you know, maybe we want to take this kid, you know, so, but yeah, you know, making a World Cup team, especially at the youngest player doing it, was amazing. You know, it didn't hit me probably until we started those three games before we left to go to the World Cup that I was actually on the team.
So first game versus Portugal, I mean, you're in the lineup, you're looking across from you, you see Figo, you see Rui Costa, you see guys like this. What are you thinking?
Let's go.
Just like that,
I was nervous, but I was like, let's go. You know, I remember Ernie talking to me in the hotel before we got in. It was the day of the game, but he's like, "Bees, just play your game." He's like, "Just play your game. Try not to think about the situation. Just play the game. Do what you got. Do what you did to get here. Do the same things you've been doing the last 2 months that you made this team. Keep doing the same things. You know, just do you." And that's what. And that talk from Ernie helped. You know,
Ernie Stewart gave you this talk.
Yeah.
Talk, and you guys are playing against Portugal, and you guys kind of took an early lead. What are you thinking at this moment?
It was surreal. You couldn't believe that goal went in, because you know Portugal, they were the, you know, the favorite, one of the favorites to win the World Cup.
That was their goal generation, though. So
exactly. So you know, obviously, no one gave us a chance in hell to win this game. You know, and especially obviously us Americans. Obviously, what happened in 98. No one's looking for us to do anything, you know. So for us to score 1, 2, 3 in the first half, man, it was crazy. So obviously at halftime, you feel like, oh man, game done. You know, you feel good. You know, all we gotta do is hold out for 45 minutes. But man, that was the longest 45 minutes of my whole career. We had, I think, maybe one shot. I think after that first 45 minutes, and after that, we were hanging on for dear life, man. I'm telling you.
So people remember that World Cup as a great World Cup run, but in group play, I mean, you guys almost didn't make it to the next round.
Yeah, we needed help. We definitely needed help because it was our group was Portugal, South Korea, and Poland. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so yeah, we beat Portugal. Drew against South Korea, but you know, I can't remember all the, you know, different variables that happened. I'm sure you probably know, but yeah, when we were playing against,
I believe South
Poland,
Korea beat Poland.
Yeah, they had to beat. They had to beat Portugal for us to go through.
Oh, forced to go through. Right.
Yeah, because we were playing Poland. Yeah,
that's right.
And I think did we drew against Poland? No, we lost.
You lost.
Yeah, we lost against Poland. Yeah. So we thought, you know, obviously we thought, oh man, that was it, because all we needed to do was draw or win, and we'll go through, regardless of what, you know, South Korea did. And we heard the news, like, literally right when the whistle blew, our 90 minutes, that South Korea, you know, beat Portugal, and that we were still going through. So, yeah, we got to say, we almost didn't make it. So the whole 2002, you know, the great World Cup that we did have, it almost didn't happen.
It almost didn't happen. You guys go to the next round. You play your hated rivals in Mexico. I know this is a game that you didn't get to play, but walk me through what you're seeing, what's going on, what the emotions.
I'm telling you, man, we had so much confidence. We did, because because it was a team we knew. It wasn't a team. They had great players and they had a great team, but it was a team we knew. It was a team that we were very familiar with, a team that we knew we could beat. We had a lot of confidence, you know, going into that game. I'm not even. We really did, you know. And there was no way we were going to lose that game, you know, with everything going on, with them being obviously our biggest rival, and knowing that we can beat Mexico, our biggest rival, to go to the quarterfinals. It couldn't get any bigger than that, you know. So
that's pre-Mexico dominance for the U.S. men's national.
Yeah, that's when it started. That's when it started.
Yeah. Right. How did you have so much confidence versus that team?
Because we're so familiar with them. It wasn't a team like a Brazil or a Russia or a team that we had no – we knew their players. We knew how they played. We knew how the USA-Mexico games went, you know. Obviously, it's a bigger stage because it's the World Cup. But we knew each player, you know. Bruce and his coaching staff, the player. Obviously, you know, even though – you know, obviously the older guys, they knew more than I did because I was just kind of getting into the rivalry with Mexico-USA. But, you know, with Ernie, Kobe, you know, McBride, all those guys, all the older guys, you know, obviously Claudio, they knew who we were playing against, you know. They were so familiar with them, and there was no way we were losing that game. You know, obviously Mexico had a lot of the ball, and, you know, they had a lot of attacking threats up top. But, yeah, we had a lot of confidence that game. I that was probably the least worried I was. And during that World Cup was that game. Seriously.
Wow.
So, before Portugal, before all those South Korea playing, you know, the home nation, you know, in front of all those, all you see is a sea of red, you know, and they're singing their chants and their you know, their songs. You know, obviously, yeah, you think like, okay, yeah, you know, it's a little nerve wracking, but, you know, let's go out here and play. But Mexico is like, okay, yeah, we got this, man. We can do this. We know them. They know us. But it's going to be a battle. But, hey, we can do this. And that's what it was.
And that's exactly what it was. And you move forward to what is Germany. And I don't want to get too much into Germany. But Torsten Frank's handball on the line. It should have been a penalty today.
Yeah, they cheated.
That would have been
cheated.
A penalty. I mean, that team had the potential to go to a semifinal.
Yeah, man. That's crazy. One play away. You know, one play away. And the thing was, that was the best game we played all time.
Yeah.
We took it to Germany, you know. I don't think they were ready for us to play that well, you know, against them. I think they took us, you know, took us lightly, and, you know, it showed all game. You know, Landon had like, you know, two or three good, you know,
solid
chances, but yeah, solid chance, but, you know, kind of made some really good saves.
And he scored those as well.
Yeah, you know, but anyone that'll say that Germany, you know, outplayed us is wrong.
No.
They just got to watch the game. But at the same time, we all know, results matter.
Yeah.
They went on, we didn't. We can say to you blue in the face, oh, we had a better game than Germany. But the fact of the matter is they got through, they won 1-0, and that's it. That's football. That's the game.
That is football. So what's the reception like when you come back home?
It was great. It wasn't even before. It was during the World Cup. Man, after that first game, you know, we had so much love from everybody, you know, and we heard, you know, everyone's, you know, cheers and messages from the States, you know, people, you know, saying that they're getting up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning to watch games. And, you know, they couldn't believe that, you know, the USA was playing like this. You know, they had never seen that, you know, just things like that. So, yeah, we definitely felt the love back home during the World Cup. And obviously when we got home, you know, we're almost kind of like heroes. you know, guys were on, you know, Letterman's and all those different talk shows, and it was like we won a World Cup, but we didn't. But it was just the fact that, you know, we did so well, furthest we've ever gotten, you know, from a USA team, and I think, you know, it just showed that we had a very good group.
So the 2002 World Cup, 2006 World Cup, 2010 World Cup, 2014 World Cup, was that the biggest reception you remember?
Coming back, I would probably say so. I think more people started watching those 6, 10,
right,
and 14. But I just think from just us, because they were so shocked and surprised that, you know, and then everyone jumped on the bandwagon, you know. I think that was probably our biggest welcoming back, you know, from that World Cup than any other one, I think.
So you're coming back from the World Cup. You go back to Major League Soccer. You end up doing so well. You start getting a few bids into the fire. I believe Southampton was one of the bids.
Yeah, Southampton. Yeah,
that fell through. I'm sure you must have been disappointed with that.
Yeah, I mean, I was. But at the same time, I wasn't too upset about it because I didn't think – I'm not saying I don't think I was ready for England, but England wasn't one of, like, my first choice to go to.
Right.
You know, obviously, you know, I felt
– What was your first choice?
When I heard about Holland, because, I mean, I had – Ajax had you know, spoke to me back when I – before, you know, with the – before the fire. And so going to Holland, and I felt that was a better kind of, you know, jump for me. Spain, there's a couple teams in Spain as well that offered something. But, you know, obviously that didn't work out. MLS, you know, said that, you know, the price was too low that they were bidding for. So I thought PSV was a great move for me, you know. And I think it was at the right time. I think I don't know what would happen if I would have went to England, went to Southampton, you know, because they were, you know, obviously they're a, you know, mid-table team, good team, a lot of money. But for me to go to PSV, you know, a winning side, a team that, you know, won so many championships and had that mentality, I think that was the best situation for me. So I wasn't too disappointed that Southampton went through. That didn't go through, sorry.
Right, and you go to PSV and you're under Gus Hiddink, and it's a team, a story team in Holland, and you're in a place where you can learn as you go type. What was that environment like for you?
Oh, man, it was great. You know, Holland was, you know, to be able to play with those players that I played with, it was just like Chicago. You know, because everyone were internationals, you know, obviously the level went up, you know, from every player a little bit from the fire to PSV. But the mentality was the same. And I think that part helped a lot, you know, because everything they had to win every game, every single game. I remember talks, you know, with Hiddink, and we would be winning 1-0 and dominating the game, you know, and he would come in at halftime and say, this is not good enough. And my PSV days, we usually win this game 3-4, 3-4-0, 3-4, 5-0, and then we go home and you guys are winning 1-0, you got down, but it's not good enough. Like, you had to win it, but put on the show, you know, and that's what it was about. So that mentality going over from Chicago, having that mentality, the players that I played with, it having the same mentality from the coach, from the players, you know, it all just went together. So I think for me, that was the perfect move to make.
And you do well, and you're in the Champions League, and I believe you guys got to the semifinals and lost Milan on away goals, and you were a big part of that. You had a great tournament.
I was the lead scorer that year.
Today, right?
What's that?
Does your record still stand to today of the American player that's gotten the furthest in Champions League? Oh, no, I had Jovan.
Jovan
didn't play. You played.
it's cool. That experience, you know, obviously I'll never forget it. I remember I was playing against, you know, when Milan was Milan.
Right.
You know, they had, you know, Kaká and Shevchenko and Vieira and
Crespo, was it Crespo?
Maldini. Yeah, no, Crespo, Maldini was still there.
Yeah.
You know, Casacorta, Cafu, Dida. I mean, I can go on. I can go on. Seedorf, I can, Dida. You know, go on with that team. Pirlo. I mean, they had a and Gattuso. Pirlo, oh, my goodness gracious. Yeah. Gattuso as well. So, I mean, you know, that was a team that we're facing, you know, in Champions League semifinal. But, yeah, man, it was great. You know, that year, you know, I led the team in Champions League. I led our team in Champions League goals that year, so that was pretty cool. But yeah, I was a big part of that European year for sure.
Please, just for a second, put yourself that team, you and PSV with social media today. You doing what you did back then today, like you know how blown up you would have been, like how crazy it would have been. DeMarcus Beasley would have been a household name.
Yeah, but I'm kind of glad that I grew up in the 70s, so well, we didn't have all this social media. But yeah, I mean, I know times change. I know the different. But you know, like I said, for me, that doesn't bother me. I'm cool with the people that, you know, respect my game and respect, you know, what I did in Europe and with the national team and everything. So it doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah. Well, if anybody knows football, they know how important you are to U.S. men's national team and the American, you know, landscape of it. So let's go. You're now you get loaned out to City, and then from City, it's a brief spell, you go to Rangers. And now Rangers is still a big club.
Yeah. And
it has a few American ties. Claudio Reyna played there, and Claudio Reyna was a big player, not only there, but the U.S. men's national team.
Yeah, he was with me at City as well.
Claudio. Oh, he was with you at City as well. So what was that like? I mean, for a lot of people, I guess fans don't know how good Claudio Reyna was.
Oh, man. he was the best player on that City team by far, you know, the way he played. But he was injured. You know, he was getting older, so he was injured, you know, a lot of the time. But when he was fit and ready, he played. And he just brought a calmness to the game. You know, he was so skilled with both feet. He never lost the ball. He was a guy that, you know, can dictate the tempo of games, you know. And he never got rushed. He's one of those players that, you know, he never seems, you know, rushed. It's just like he does everything at his pace, his time. When he wants to play the ball long, he'll play. If he wants to play it short, he'll play. If he wants to dribble out somewhere with his skill, he'll do it, you know. But he's never rushed. He's never panicking. He's got the ball. He's like, oh, what do I do? Nah, that was never Claudio. Claudio is hands down one of the best players that ever played for the U.S.
Easily. One of the best players I've seen. Many don't have that or haven't
easily.
Had of watching easily. Him. I have this debate all the time where they talk about the all-time greats. And I think somebody, when Christian Pulisic was barely coming up through the ranks – had said he was already the best player, and I remember saying he's not better than Claudio, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't want to put him in the conversation with Landon if he's not better than Claudio. And people look at me like, you're dumb, Claudio who? You know,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Was playing UBA, Christian was, you know, the same age as Dortmund. I'm like, you don't understand. You don't understand.
Yeah, how good this guy was. Yeah, Claudio. Yeah, he was a player, man. But yeah, I was with him at City, and then after that, my City stint was good. I was injured when I first got there, you know, and they still signed me because I was injured. So, like, the first, you know, I think 6 games or 7 games I didn't play, obviously, because I was coming back from an injury that I had at PSV. And but, yeah, when I was fit, I played. And obviously, getting into those teams was difficult, you know. So I had to wait my time. I had to wait my time when I played for City. And then when I played, I scored that first goal, and I think it was in January or something like that against West Ham. Now, after that, you know, I played basically every game and I was fit, you know, so it was good.
So good experience at City. You go to Rangers, you're having a good time. You're an important player. And then there's a Champions League game, and you start getting some racist taunts going on. Do you remember that game?
Yeah, I do. Man, it was, you know, to actually experience it, you know, we can, everyone can talk about it and say, oh man, you know, that's bad, but to actually experience it, it's a different feeling. You know, you have so many emotions going through you because obviously you're trying to play, you're trying to, you know, trying to win, and you're trying to, just focus on the game, you know, because that's what you're supposed to do because you're, you know, you're a player. But to hear that, you know, the monkey chants while you're playing every time you get the ball, and it's a feeling that's you feel rage, you feel, you know, that you want to do something more than just play the game, you know? And it's disheartening to know it's still happening in the game, you know? But to feel it firsthand, it was difficult. And after the game, you know, I spoke about it. I got racist chants and, you know, and everyone can hear it, you know, but back then, like they're doing now, I just kind of brushed under the table. It's like, okay, yeah, he said it. We'll make a complaint for the team against the team, and then, you know, that was it. You know, so there wasn't really that much done to, you know, for me speaking out, and you know, the coach as well, Walter Smith spoke out as well, saying, you know, this is not right. This should be happening in football, but you know, I would say, yeah, we'll look into it, but then it just gets swept under the table, and then that's it.
It's 13 years later, and we're seeing the same type of things still going on.
Yeah, and it's you know, for me, I feel, you know, for players that are still getting that kind of treatment, and like I said, it's going to take, and I hate to say this, but it's going to take someone going to the stands and knocking somebody out, and for a player to do that to, you know, to fans, they see it, you know, face to face,
right? For people to really.
To take action, because nothing is being done. You know, FIFA's not doing anything. They're just kind of, you know, backing whatever, you know, backing their name, their brand of the game, And it's disgusting, to be honest. So, but yeah, I think that's what it's going to take. Well, one guy, because everyone's different. Everyone, you know, is different. So you might have, you know, African American take it one way and say, okay, hey, you know, like David from Brazil, you know, he took the banana and he ate it. You know, you got that. But then you might have someone that Danny Alves. You might have somebody else that is going to literally jump in the stands and try to knock somebody out.
The Hotspur Tottenham's player going to the stands in front of fans.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's crazy that it's came to that, you know, that it's getting away from football. So
your time in Scotland was obviously noteworthy. At one time, you had an issue where somebody came to your house and set your car off. What's going on here? Explain this to me.
Yeah, man, it was
some You're laughing.
Times. Yeah, I know, but it's only because I thought it was gonna go in another way. I thought it was you know, soccer and this and that, but then you got the car thing. That's why I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, man. Outside my crib, outside my house. Somebody blew up my car. It's funny that it's not funny that I'm saying it, but it's crazy to think that I'm actually saying this out loud.
Arby's, what was the reasoning behind this?
I can't talk about that. You know, it's something I can't talk about. But yeah, they blew up my car. Someone, took and it was on camera,
fan, right?
Yo, it was on camera. Wow. But you know, obviously they couldn't see it, you know, because they had CCTV, you know, on the streets, whatever. And my car was parked outside, you know, outside of my house, outside of my apartment building. And they took a bottle of kerosene thing, couldn't see what it was on the video, and they broke my window, threw it in the car, and then there it is.
Yeah, well, for brevity's sake, I want to fast forward a few things. I don't want to keep you too long, but you also started in Scotland your own jewelry line.
Yeah.
Black Diamonds. How did you get into this? Most people don't know about this.
Yeah. Every year, you know, Rangers, they have, you know, their gala, you know, for sponsors, for season ticket holders, for the team, players, excuse me. And so, yeah, one of the sponsors was this lady. She had her own store, you know, for diamonds, this and that. She was sitting at our table, a couple of the guys at our table. She was sitting at our table. And I already had jewelry of my own, you know, that I bought, you know, I just bought. You know, I think I had maybe a ring. Maybe a bracelet or something like that. I can't remember what I was wearing that actual day. And she came up to me. She's like, oh, I love your diamonds. And then, you know, she gave me her card and she's like, yeah, I have a store. You should come check it out. And I was like, yeah, for sure. You know, I love, you know, the bling, you know, back then bling, right. You know, the word, you know, so I was all part of that. You know, I had the watches, the rings and, you know, all that stuff, diamonds. And, she was like, oh, so who designed this for you? I was like, me. Like, I went to the, you know, I go to the jewelry and I say, okay, this is what I want. You know, I want it like this, like that, like that. Wow. So I kind of did my own thing. And then people made it for me. And she's like, oh, really? She's like, okay. And then literally, like, maybe I went to her store, checked it out. And then literally about a month after that, she called me and said, hey, what do you think about having your own jewelry line, your jewelry, you designing your own stuff? I was like, nah, I'm not really. I'm not trying to do that. She's like, no, really. Like, I have some ideas that I think you would really like. She's like, yo, just come to the store again and just let me run this by you. And I was like, okay. I was like, all right, cool. So I went to the store and, like, she was designing. And I was saying, okay, well, I like this one, but I think if you do this a little bit better, then maybe this will, you know, because I wanted it to be, you know, somewhat my style, but, you know, her style as well, because we designed them together.
Right.
You know? And then after that, she's like, okay, I really want to do this. Like, let's really make this a business. And I was like, are you serious? And she was like, yeah. She's like, I really want to do this for you.
What's it called?
What's that?
What's it called?
The DeMarcus Collection.
The DeMarcus Collection.
Yeah, the DeMarcus Collection. It's still being sold in Scotland. I talked to someone the other day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can, we specialize in black diamonds, black onyx, you know, the stone. I like the black because, it has a, you know, it's fierce, it's bold,
right.
It's, you know, it's very clean cut, sleek. You know, that's what I liked about the black.
Where's your bling right now, DeMarcus? I don't see any bling.
My bling goes into all my daughter's sticks. I don't have any more bling. I don't have no more bling. I wear an earring and a watch. That's about it.
Because I remember going to Ash theme camps and then Josie or Mo, and they're blinged out.
Oh yeah, that was how it was back in the day.
Oh, I'm sorry, not Josie, Eddie Johnson.
Eddie Johnson, yeah, yeah, that's how it was back in the day. We were, we were not competing, but we were. Silently, we were competing back then. You know, who had the best jewelry and it's not
the most
but that's
lost out.
Most lost out watch, ring, whatever you want to call it.
Is it Mo? Is it Eddie?
That's when I had a do-rag back in the day. Yeah. And I had hair. Man, those were some times.
Yeah, it's good stuff. All right, so I want to go fast forward. You spent a little time in Germany, at Hanover, but you made your way to Mexico, man.
Yeah.
DeMarcus Beasley, U.S. men's national team legend at that point already, make his way to Puebla, Mexico.
Yeah. And I just, before you talk about Mexico, I just want to say with Germany, like, I had to, I think, if I didn't have that experience in Germany, I don't think I would have done as well as I did in Puebla.
Why?
Because when I went, I mean, I didn't play, you know, I didn't play. I played four games. I didn't start. I only made four appearances, you know, and I made every excuse that you could make that why I didn't play, you know? I always had confidence that I could, you know, could do it, but it was, you know, obviously players go through ups and downs, you know, throughout their career. And for me, that was a turning point, you know,
excuse. How did you realize you were making excuses?
After talking to Jurgen, Jurgen Klinsmann, you know, he asked me, you know, I know I'm going kind of out of the question. But when I got called back into the national team, you know, he sat me down and he said, "Beez, why didn't you play in Germany?" And I was like, "I don't know why." He's like, "No, really." I was like, "Why?" He's like, "Why do you think you didn't play?" And I said, "I mean, I thought I was training well. The coach didn't like me, or, you know, I didn't, everything was, you know, was pointing the finger at somebody else, you know, it wasn't just me saying, you know, I didn't do enough to warrant a place in that team. You know, everything was, oh, well, you know, I didn't like the city, you know, I was by myself. Every excuse I could use, I said, you know, I was like, I didn't, you know, the city wasn't, you know, it was small. I didn't like it. You know, it was very, you know, it was different from the other countries that I was at. You know, the coach, you know, he talked to me, but he didn't really talk to me. You know, he never spoke to me in English. You know, so I was making every single excuse I could make. And, you know, Jurgen finally said, he's like, "Beez, for one, I don't believe that." And I said, "Okay." And he's like, "Every coach, any coach you have, professional, if he's a national team coach, he is going to play the team, regardless of how he feels with you personally. He is going 9.9 out of 10 times, he is going to play the team that's going to win the game that day. If you're one of those players, he's going to play you. If you're, you know, maybe you haven't, you know, trained well or whatever, but if he trusts you, if he thinks that on this day, I can trust this player to win us a game, he's going to play you." So there was something that you weren't doing with training, with whatever, that did not catch his eye and said, "Okay, you know what? This guy I can count on. This guy I can play. This guy, you know, I'm going with him today because, you know, he can play, or we can win this game with him." If the coach doesn't say that, then it's you. It's not the coach. It's not your environment. It's you. Obviously, there's different circumstances where, right, I, there's good players that didn't play is because, you know, it just didn't happen. This didn't work. But in my case, it wasn't like that. You know, I was making excuses for myself and blaming everybody else and saying, you know, because and then when he told me that, you know, he said, when he told me about the, you know, every coach you're going to play is his best 11 to win him that day, that game. You know, I look back and I was like, I literally thought about it. I'm like, did I really train as much hard as I could have? Did I really, you know, take the time and really try to learn the German, you know, style and, you know, how they want to play this, that? Yeah, the culture. I mean, the culture, yes. But as far as like playing, and I was like, no, I didn't, you know, because like I knew I had that, kind of that chip on my shoulder was like, I knew that I could give more, but I knew I wasn't going to play. So I was like, you know what? Forget it. I'm not really going to trade as hard as I could. Am I going to really go for that ball?
Do you regret that?
I don't say I regret it, because I mean, I wish things would have gone differently, you know, right. But I wouldn't say I regret it, because that made me the player we're about to talk about in Puebla, you know? And I think for me, I always had confidence in myself and my ability and what I could do. And I knew I needed that German experience to not play, to really just, you know, be like, okay, B's, like, what's going on? Do you really want to do this or you don't? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you're not with the national team. You're not playing in Germany. You know, I had a couple teams in like Scandinavia that wanted me to play. I'm not going to Scandinavia. You know, no disrespect to Scandinavia, but right, I'm not going there to play. And that was it. You know, I was an unwanted player at the time. You know, so it was like, you know, all right, let's go. You need to get your contract. You need to get your career, you know, back on track. I know I can do it. I'm talking to myself. I know I can do it. So I just need a good situation. Make sure I sit down and pick the right one, and then I'm gonna show that I can, you know, be back to my best.
So you go to Puebla. This is, I believe, 2011 now.
Yeah, 2011.
You must be 30 years old now, because we're the same age. So I think you're 29, 30.
You're older than me. Stop saying we're the same
5
age.
5 months. I'm older than you. We're the same age group.
Stop saying we're the same age, man. Stop saying that. You are older than me. There you go.
All right. I'm older than you by a month. So you must be 29, maybe 30 years old at this point. Yeah. Obviously, it's a turning point, not only in your career, but in your life. You're finding yourself in a different country, a different culture, a different brand of football.
Yeah.
And maybe the first time in your career, you've got doubts, so to speak, about where this is going.
Yeah.
How do you get to Puebla? What's the first moments like in Puebla?
Yeah, man. I actually went to Pachuca. That's when Gringo, he was there, Jose
Orozco. Yeah.
Yeah. Orozco. Mikey was there as well.
Nicola Rosco,
and so I actually, so the first contact that I had was from Pachuca. And obviously I didn't play in Germany, and they were like, oh, we want you to come on trial. And I'm like, I'm not coming on trial, you know, I'm not doing that. I knew I didn't play in the Bundesliga, but I'm not going to go on trial. I wasn't at that level to do, you know, I wasn't going to do that. And they were like, okay, well, not trial, but just come for, you know, a week, see how you like it.
Can you really quickly explain to people, when a player agrees to go on trial, you almost are giving that team the benefit of the doubt that they can kind of treat you how they want and give you whatever they want, correct?
Yeah, they did. But the thing, the funny thing was that we already had a pre-contract kind of already arranged in place. So if I did well in the first, you know, whatever, how long I was going to be there, you know, I would get that, you know, I would have that contract. And I was okay with that. You know, the money, whatever, I was fine. You know, new situation, whatever. And I went there. I trained the first 2 days. I was like, okay, yeah, we're good. We want to sign you. And I was like, okay, cool. So you send me the, you know, whatever. I stayed, I think, 2 or 3 more days after that. But then after that, I got the contract, and it was like 100-something thousand short.
Oh.
And it was like, oh, well, yeah. And then they're like, oh, well, you have to – we don't have space for you as well. And I'm like, wait, so you don't have the money that you agree, and then you don't have space for me. Back then there was only 5 foreigners. Yeah, right. Back then there was only 5, and they already had their 5. And so this is what they said. They said, okay, we're gonna put you on the second team. You're going to train – Exactly. That's what I said. Wait, what?
My eyebrows are up.
Yeah. So, because I mean, the owner didn't want, you know, he didn't want me to, you know, he wanted to sign me, but he couldn't. So he's like, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to, you want to sign, and then, but you're going to play for the second team. But then next, you know, after the, you know, 2 seasons, the first season, you know, we're going to let go of somebody, and then, you know, we're going to, so basically 6 months, you're going to be with the second team. I said, what? I was like, no. I was like, there's not. I was like, there wasn't even a negotiation after that.
Right.
Wasn't even a negotiation. So then, you know, fast forward, like literally a day, I was still in Mexico. A day, Puebla, they heard that I was in Mexico, and they said, hey, you know, would you want to play with us? And I was like, yeah, but with them, it was different because they told me the whole project. That's when they got, you know, Luis Garcia, yeah. You know, they're telling me the team that they're, you know, trying to build, and, you know, the owner's putting in money, and you want to go for the championship, you want to, you know, put the team back on the map, you know, all this right. stuff. So he was telling
Luis me. Luis Garcia, Liverpool, Luis Garcia, yeah. you know, national.
Yeah, exactly, player. Yeah, right. And they were telling me what they were trying to do and, you know, who they're trying to bring in and all this stuff. So I got, you know, somewhat the project of what they wanted to do. And I felt really wanted, you know, real talk. I felt really wanted. So literally I drove from Pachuca, went to Puebla, and I met the coach. I met the, you know, the sporting director and all that. And after that, the next day I trained for a day or two, and then we had a tournament in Tijuana.
So, obviously, I know you will agree with me. The city-wise, a huge upgrade, Pachuca, to what is now Puebla.
Oh, yeah. not even a question.
So now you feel more comfortable. They yeah. already have a track record of kind of going outside the box. They've had already a few Americans play for them, a few players who were in Major League Soccer. Ramon Nunez, I don't know if you remember that kid.
I remember that. He played for
FC Dallas. He was there. Yeah. Your boy that you're talking to right now went there.
Yeah.
You know, there was obviously
– goal scoring champ. I know.
So this is why I kept tabs on you. So I still had friends there. Yeah. And I would ask because I was playing at that moment, I think, now in Tecos or Santos.
And, I think you're at Tecos then.
In 2011, it was Tecos then. And yeah. I would talk to my friends in that team. Hey, how's B's doing? And like, yo, this guy is killing it.
Yeah.
He's playing left back or he's playing left wing. He's playing like a 10, and he's like been the MVP of our team. So you go from a process of being doubted to you even doubting yourself to all of a sudden being the most important player in your rival's country on that team.
Yeah. I mean, I had my reservations going to Mexico because I didn't know how I was going to get, you know, treated. You know, obviously, and back then, it wasn't because of, you know, not because I was black. I said because I'm American.
Right.
And back then, that's when the USA was above Mexico. We were beating them literally every single time.
Because this dominance was well over a decade.
Yeah, exactly. So the dominance, I lived through that dominance. You know, that was, you know, was USA against Mexico, and USA was, you know, was killing back then, you know. You know, so I didn't know how I would get received. And when I first went to Puebla, but man, it was total opposite of what I thought, you know, from the first minute, you know, I got so much love from the fans, from the city. When I would go to, you know, to restaurants, you know, like I'll eat free, you know, it was great, man. I mean, I got so much love in Mexico, and I didn't expect it. I really did not, you know, even from the, you know, opposing fans, it's like, team guys, you know, all that stuff. It's like, man, I love how you play. You know, yeah. I love how you play. You can kill Messi, but man, I love how you play. These are opposing fans as well.
Right. You know? That.
Yeah, I thought for sure I don't get booed. F-box. Even by my own fans, no. You know, I thought I don't get booed. Like until, you know, obviously until you gain the respect of the fans and like, you know, you really want to be there and you show that, you know, you can play and, you know, you deserve a spot. I thought for sure I don't get booed every single game, but it was the total opposite, man. Total opposite. So, for me, going to that situation, the perfect situation with that team, like I said, I always had confidence in myself, and I knew it was going to take a good situation, the right situation, to get me back to, you know, to playing like how I knew I could play, and I always wanted to play in, you know, in that style, in that kind of style of football, Spain,
that's
Mexico,
exactly what I was gonna say.
South America, that's almost what I loved.
Because it's funny, because when I hear you talk about the type of player you were in Chicago and how Bob would tell you to let go of the ball and you wouldn't pass it. Well, I had the privilege and honor of playing with you in 2010 World Cup. And from there on, you know, with the national team, I remember how good of a passer you were. Yeah. I remember how
intelligent. People take that for granted. People take that for granted. Like, I loved it. I think that people don't think I can pass the ball. It's crazy, though. Like, oh, no, he's not a good passer. But, yeah, actually, yeah. I actually am.
Bees, you're easily one of the smartest U.S. men's national team players I've played with. And I've played with you as a left midfielder. I played with you as a left back, which we will get into in a bit. But you feel you're underrated in that sense that people have not given you your due.
And I wouldn't say underrated. I I think there's fans or people that's gonna, you know, like you, and then people that's the everyone has their own critics. There's no one in the world that everyone that a player that fans like, you know, right. Every single person. I mean, there are people that don't think Messi's good, huh? There's people that think that Ronaldo's not that great,
right?
Really, you know what I'm saying? Like, so you can't get caught up in that kind of stuff, you know. But as far as the only thing that I would say is being an underrated passer. I would say that because, you know, for me, you ask any teammates, like I love that style of football, you know, passing. Because I mean, and I got that one out obviously with Bob when we started, but then in Holland, that's all you do.
Right.
Sometimes that's it's exactly. Boring. You know, I mean, you cannot lose the ball in Holland. You can't. I mean, if you got to go backwards 10 times, you go backwards 10 times. You know, that's how hitting played, you know, how he coached, you know, and so I got that kind of, you know, style in me to, you know, make sure, be good with the ball, make the right pass. And I think I was definitely an underrated passer for sure.
For sure. And that's very much the style that exists in Mexico, especially back then. Yeah. You talk about being liked. You know who liked you a lot? The Puebla police. They liked
Man, they love me because I was giving them free money.
So you used to get pulled over all the time?
All the time. My first probably not even a year, probably like 7-8 months. Hurt. I'm not exaggerating. I was getting pulled over once a week. Man, it's not funny.
It's so I remember hearing about this, and then because for people who don't know, like when I was in Torreon and I played for Santos, the city's called Torreon. I had a Camaro, a black Camaro, and mine was the only black Camaro in the town. So you would identify me.
Yeah. Same thing. I had the Camaro. Yeah. Dog, I'm telling you, this literally every week I would get stopped. They would ask for my, and I wasn't doing nothing. They would ask me for my license. They'd be like, okay, let me see your license. I'm like, nah, because, you know, obviously I talked to my teammates. They're like, yo, B, do not give them your license because they're gonna if you don't give them money, they're going to take it down to the station. You got to hold back a big deal. It's going to take you 200 days to get a license, get your license back, you know? So it's like, yo, don't give me your license. Always keep like 200 pesos, 300 pesos in your console, and then you can give it to
you're overpaying, B's.
let me finish. So first couple times, you know, it was like, okay, I gave, you know, 200, 300 pesos, and that was it. But then the cops started asking me, you know, for more. They would say, all right, well, if you give me 500, then you can go. So I'd be like, all right. You know me, I just want to get out. I'm lying here. Take it. Here, take it. So, I mean, like for the first like 7-8 times I got stopped, I paid every single time. Every single time. So then the thing that – before – I don't want to get off too fast, but the thing that really – made me, because at first it was like, I just felt, you know, it was the culture, you know, it's what it is. Because I mean, the players did tell me, it's like, yo, B's, when you get stopped, just keep, you know, $200-$300 in your, no, pesos in your console so you can give it to the cop if they, you know, they ask for money or whatever. So I just, at the beginning, I just thought it was part of the game, you know, it's part of it, it's what you got to do, no problem. So I didn't really think anything of it. But the one time, was that, and this is when I, you know, obviously I spoke and went on my Twitter and all that stuff about it back in the day, was that this cop stopped me. It was probably about maybe 11 o'clock at night. I was going home. Obviously, just going home, you know. I went to eat, going home, and the cop stopped me. And he says, you know, where are you going? I was like, I'm going home. He's like, have you been drinking? I'm like, no. I was like, I'm literally right here.
Right.
And I was like, you can see, I was like, I'm literally right there. And he was like, all right, well, you need to give me, you know, 500 or whatever. No, this is, I think it was like 2,000 pages, something like that, something crazy. And I was like,
$100.
Yeah, I was like, I don't have it. And he's like, all right, well, give me a license. I'm like, no, I'm not giving you my license. He's like, no, you have to, you know, oh, well, give me money. I was like, and I literally, I remember to this day, I'm in my driver's seat, and I'm showing him, I'm lifting up my thing, I've pulled up my pockets, you know, like this, and I don't have
You're
any money.
Physically
showing him that I was like, man, I don't have any money. He's like, all right, there's an ATM machine right down the street. Hurt. I'm not. This cop said, yo, there's an ATM. Hurt. I'm telling you this. You know, I can't make it up. He followed me to the ATM machine.
Oh, yes. I believe it.
I'm standing like I'm sitting down now, but I'm standing. He stood like right behind me. We went to the ATM machine. I pulled out, I think it was like 1,500 pesos, 2,000 pesos, whatever it was. And I said, I took the money. I said, here you go. He's like, all right, have a good night. And walked away. He, a policeman, told me, he's like, yo, there's an ATM machine right down the street.
Yeah. I wish I could
tell. So he followed me. I don't think people understand.
Latin America, that the corruption is prevalent, and that type of thing happens all the time. Sidebar really quickly, I will tell you a brief story. My first time in Puebla that I started getting a little fame, I started scoring goals. I irresponsibly one night got in my car after having a few drinks, and I'm not talking about like drunk. I'm talking about having a few drinks. But in the United States, if you, you know, have a few drinks and they catch you, it could be a DUI. You don't have to be drunk.
Right.
So they pull me over, and I'm freaking out because I'm thinking, man, in the U.S. it's $10,000 fine. My name's in the papers. This, all that. I'm going to go to jail. Yeah. Like, oh, I'm freaking out. He comes up to me and he asks for my license, and he flashes a light in front of my eyes and he goes, Hercules? And I said, yeah. And he goes, have you been drinking? I was like, yeah, I had a few drinks. And he's like, ah. And he goes, hold on. And he whistles to his partner and he goes and talks to his partner, and I'm freaking out. I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And he literally comes back and he goes, get in the front seat. And I was like, huh? Get in the front seat. He gets in the car. He drives me like 5 blocks to where I live, drops me off, him and his partner, and says, hey, we're big fans.
Oh.
I gave him everything I had in my pocket.
Yeah, right. That's who you want to give it to. Yeah, sure.
It's a very different culture in Latin America, and football is king. And by the way, I am admitting I did the wrong thing. I wasn't drunk, but you should never.
I hear you. All right. Yeah. We all make mistakes. But yeah. But I mean, for that to happen, you know, that happened, whatever. But my time in Mexico, I loved it. You know, the country, the city, the people, the food. Oh, man. That was probably one of my – that's probably like the, you know, top two – you know, places that I lived in to play soccer.
Wow.
Yeah. I really enjoy Puebla. Really enjoy it. Not just because I was playing and, you know, playing well, but just the whole, you know, the whole vibe of, you know, just the 3 years that I was there, you know, how I got treated. Obviously, yeah, you know, things with the ownership was different, but I mean, just from the fans, the city, the people, my teammates, you know, we had some good years, we had, you know, some bad years too, but just from that part of it and the football stance, the football part of it was great.
Now we've gone a little over an hour. I don't want to take too much of your time. I want to finish up with the Dynamo and some other things, some dynamics, but just walk me through. Now you're in Houston, you're a designated player, you played in MLS's infancy. And now you're coming back to when Major League Soccer is at its prime. It's gaining attraction. It's gaining notice. Players around the world are starting to ask and come and want to know what it's about. Fans, it's growing in attendance. What's it like when you come back to Major League Soccer?
Man, it was like a kid on Christmas, you know? All the new lights and the new bells and whistles and all that, you know? You know, I left MLS when they were, 14 teams maybe? 12? 14? Wow. Something like that. Yeah, 12 teams. I think there were 12 teams when I left. And, you know, it was up to like 20-something, you know, when I came back. You know, teams had their own stadiums, training facilities. Because obviously, you know, if it was a long trip, we would go a day early. Or 2 days early, sorry, 2 days early. And train at that team's facility. And, I mean, the facilities were phenomenal. You know, some of these places that we were going to in the States, and to see that, and to see the fans, even the media, you know, people like, well, you weren't media then, but you know, now the media, the media coverage, the, you know, fans, just the, you know, sponsorships, the, you know, everything was heightened, you know, 100 times more than what, you know, when I left it. So, I mean, for me being American, you know, starting my career in MLS, to see that and see how far it grew, you know, and that short of time was pretty amazing, pretty remarkable.
I want to go back through memory lane of you. Short little dynamics. It's been an unbelievable talk, but I want to promise to get you going right now. We're going to do a little, I guess, trip down memory lane. So I want you really quickly, from what you've seen, what's the best MLS team of all time?
Ooh, MLS team. Man, can I be biased?
Yes, absolutely. Please.
Because I know there were some good teams through the time I was in Europe, Mexico. You know, those, 11, 12, 13, whatever, however long I was in outside of the country. So I can't really say one of those teams because I didn't see it. You know, I wasn't there, you know, day in and day out. So for me, I have to say that I got to say my 2000 Chicago Fire. Have to. We went to the final. Obviously, we didn't win. We got, you know, KC beat us that year, but we won the Open Cup that season. But that team that year, it was special. I mean, we literally go ahead.
I was gonna say, how would that team do today in Major League Soccer?
We'd be fine. You telling me that Peter Noah? I'm talking about even at that age.
Peter was a crack.
Oh man, he didn't stop running. The way he played, I mean, Lubos and CJ. I mean, back then when defenders defended, you know, not just trying to be, you know, pretty and this and that and be the best player as far as like passing and trying to score goals off headers. I mean, defenders that defended and love to defend. I'm not saying they don't do that now. Don't get me wrong.
That's what you're saying. It sounds like that's what you're saying.
Nah, don't get me wrong. Don't put that. I'm not saying that. I mean, no, I know still what
you
some mean.
Like true defenders, not
true defenders. You know,
the back.
Yeah. You know, all the priests. I mean, just defenders that just love to defend. We had that. Our midfield was crazy with Jesse and Chris, Dima, Peter. You know, myself, Wolfie, Ante,
Josh. Man. Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then Stoich, just think of this three. Stoich, he kind of like tilted to the left. Ante up top and Wolfie on the right.
Wow.
Man, you telling me what?
You got two players that can crack a ball, one with the left foot in Ante and one with the right foot in Stoichkov. And then you got Josh Wolf, who's one of the most intelligent players I've ever played with.
Yeah. We got goals. We got tenacity in the midfield with Jesse and Chris with how smart they were. Dima, you know, doing this thing, we always need some, you know, always need that bulldog in the team, you know. And Chris was that because he got around the field and he broke up passes. But, you know, Dima was just a little bit extra.
Dima will break your ankle trust me.
He's a little bit extra, you know. Yeah. So, man, I got to say, for just to, you know, be biased, I know people are going to say, oh, well, you know, what about LAFC and this and that? And, you know, but for me, that – you know, and I don't want to disrespect like the DCs before, but I didn't play then.
Right.
You know, in 98s and 99s where they won everything, you know. So because, you know, obviously I'm sure if Tony Sina hears this, he's gonna be like, man, B's, you didn't say 98 DC United. You know what I'm saying? So but I'm like, man, I didn't play against y'all back then, you know what I'm saying? So like there's a couple of the LA good. Teams were good.
They won, you know? I believe, two international titles as well.
Exactly. You know, but I didn't play against, you know, I didn't play against them. I didn't see them, you know what I'm saying? Right. So I can't say them when I did. Like, I'm not going to say any team from 2004 to 2014. No 10-year, I wasn't there. You know what I'm saying? So I can't say, okay, that team was good. This team, I can't say that. You know, so the teams that I played or that I was with, I have to, you know, just being biased, I got to say 2000 Chicago Fire.
All right. You were with a lot of these teams. What's the best U.S. men's national team of all time?
Ooh, lineup?
No, I'll take your lineup right now, but I want just the best team. Was it 2002, 2006, 2010, 2014? I know it wasn't the 2006 because
definitely 2006. Yeah, definitely 2006.
And you guys are ranked third in the world.
I know, man. Yeah, we. I mean, I dropped the ball on that too. I had so much. There's a lot of. I had a lot more responsibility than I did in 2002, and I dropped the ball. You know, I was disappointed in myself with that, you know, personally with that World Cup. But, the best team, oh, man, I would say, man, I mean, that's tough, man. Obviously, it's either 2002 or I want to say 2014. I would say 2002. Yeah, I would say
run.
Yeah, and not because I think 2014, 2010, definitely more talent. You know,
right.
Hands, you know, man for man, those two teams have more talent than the 2002 team. You know, for sure. For, you know, man to man. You know,
right.
More talent, but the closeness of that group in 2002. was special. Like you really felt it. You know, not that the other ones didn't, but I think that what we had in 2002, you know, kind of steps apart off the field, apart. That makes the difference from 2010 and 2014, because those teams were way more talented, not way more talented, but more talented than 2002 team. You know, because you know you got the players that we had in 2014, but I think 2002 was the best all around, just you know, team, but a group of guys.
It's funny you say that, because I've had this argument with other pundits or experts about how the 2002 team was a better team, but 2010 and 2014 had better talent, like the pool was better, and yeah, they seem to 100% disagree with me.
No, you're 100% right. You know, now I mean the pool is, you know, you have so many players you can choose from now, you know, whether they deserve to be on that team or not, that's a whole different story. We can talk about that that's a whole different podcast show, you know, our opinions of what players, but the pool of players is so much bigger than it was back then, you know, that part is for sure. You know, like you said, I mean, you touched on it before. You said, you know, the kids nowadays, yeah, were they more talented now?
Yeah.
Than they were before? Yeah, I think so. Like you said, they have resources, the training, the, you know, the environments that they're getting. Science, yeah, the environment. I mean, I was like when I was 14, 15, I was coming from my club team in Fort Wayne. I mean, these guys are playing, you know, if they're good enough, they might even train with the first team with whatever city that they're in. Or they're playing against, you know, the Chicago Fire juniors or the Portland Timbers juniors or the Seattle. There's, you know, guys that in professional environments train every day. I ain't had that. I was training on a cow field by myself and my brother. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't have that environment, those resources to actually get better and be better and play at that level when I was, you know, 13, 14. I had to go with the U-17s to get that, and that's why they did it, you know?
Absolutely. All right.
And that was only, but that's only a select few of your players, you know? It was only, 24 of us, you know? Now it's, you know, it's hundreds of kids.
Now there's 24 in each city.
Exactly, you know, so yeah, but that part, yeah, the talent wise and the talent pool and just the pool of players is, yeah, it was definitely, it's a lot bigger now than it was then.
For sure, for sure. Let's see, best MLS player you've ever seen.
Oh, man. Best MLS player I've ever seen. Do I have to pick one?
One.
I knew you were going to say that. I'm going to say, man, I mean, because everyone, I know who you think I'm going to say, because, you know, Charlie Kendall, you say all this.
No, I'm not saying Charlie Kendall. Not the best MLS ever for me.
No?
No.
Oh, man. Best ever. I mean, I got to go with that DC team. It's either Jaime or
Echeverry. You're going to go with Jaime or Echeverry?
Yeah.
Over Landon?
Oh, I forgot about Larry. I didn't know he counted.
why do you call him?
I think for the impact, you know, yeah, 100%. 100% Larry. I mean, he made the league. He was the league. He was the league. Wasn't even like he made it. He was the league, you know? And, I mean, he still is. Now he has an MVP named after him.
Yeah. Which is weird, you know,
I mean, it is what it is. That's a good shout. I wasn't thinking Landon because I know he went the year, you know, all that kind of stuff.
No. Why do you call him Larry?
We just got a nickname.
What's your nickname?
Mark. Larry and Mark. Yeah, that's my dog, Larry, man. Yeah, Larry and Mark. Yeah, so. But no, yeah, I agree with that. Landon, yeah, for sure. Okay. Yeah.
This is where it gets tricky. The best U.S. men's national team player of all time. There are a few in that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'll say my top three, and then I'll say the one that I think is the best.
Okay.
You know, Claudio.
Okay.
Landon and Clint.
Yeah.
Those three. This is my opinion. These are everyone has their own opinions of who they think they're the best and this and that, blah, blah, blah. But for me, you know, playing with, you know, in that era, you know, in 2000 with the older guys, you know, that era now, you know, coming with the guys now, I got the edge goes for me is to Landon. I think he's not just how he played and how impactful he was, in games that we really needed him. He was for me. He was a GOAT. That's my opinion.
And opinions differ on this because my personal opinion is Clint, because I've never played with a competitor like Clint. He's got like that Mamba mentality about him. That's the differentiating factor for me. It's what Clint does with that mentality and where kind of his story, where he's come from, how much he's done at the level he's done it for so long.
Consistently. Oh, yeah.
But Landon, I mean, you're splitting hairs. That's the thing.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, you can't go wrong with either one of them, to be honest.
Right.
I just I'm talking about like just from the whole career because I mean I was with Landon from the get out. See all that stuff that especially when he was at a young age to do what he did. That was special. So for me that's why and that's the tip for me. To be able to I was seeing Landon. In 2000 Landon Donovan, 2001 Landon, 2002 Landon.
Right.
So seeing that throughout his whole career, I got to give it to Larry.
I played with Landon in the national team and the LA Galaxy and we're the same age. And I played with players like Cuauhtémoc Blanco, Giovinco, Sambuesa, like very talented players.
Yeah.
And the thing that's always set Landon apart and that I always say out of anybody I've ever played with, he's the one player that always does what he's supposed to do. If he's supposed to shoot, he shoots. If he's supposed to pass the ball, he passes the ball.
Yeah.
He's just got that innate ability for reading the moment.
Yeah, he does. He was a smart player. Smarter. And I'm sure that even the older guys will tell you, even at a young age, at 19, 20, you can see, how smart of a football player he was. He made the right pass. Like you said, he did most things right. The easy things that people take for granted. If you need to make a 5-yard pass, you make a 5-yard pass. Make a 5-yard pass. Right. Yeah, exactly. So I think that part, set Landon apart. For me, that's my opinion.
Yeah. All right, B's. Last one, and then we're letting you go. Give me your U.S. Men's National Team best 11 all time, okay? Who do you got in goal?
In goal, going with Timmy.
Timmy.
That's probably the hardest.
Yeah, because it's the best position we've ever played.
Exactly. Because I played with, Frito and Casey a little bit with Tony. And I mean, literally all four of those were
your
great goalkeepers.
You played with Tony Miota?
I played with, that's what I'm saying. Like the names that I was naming off that LA team, like Herdamo CEO, I was with them. I played against him. I was with him, even like Alexi and Robert Fredo, Marcelo, all the old, all the old national team guy, So yeah, right. I'm old, man. Let me be. The grades are coming in, I'm telling you.
You don't got to tell me, brother. I got the grades too. All right. Give me your two center backs.
All right. Now I'm going with a back three.
Oh, back three. Wow. Go ahead.
Back three. Yeah, back three. So my back three, Eddie Pope.
Okay.
Eddie Pope, Carlos.
Boca.
And I think it was Marcelo.
Balboa. All right.
Balboa. Okay. That's my three.
All right. How about on the right?
Stevie. Hands down.
Rondolo.
Yeah, he was probably like the first one I put on that list.
It's very easy.
You know what you're going to get from Stevie.
That's right.
So I'm going with a little bit more of an attacking team. So Claudio.
Claudio
in the middle with you can be different either with Landon in the middle with him or it could be Christian.
Well, listen,
I'm already putting Christian in it.
It's your team. Who's on the left?
Me,
of course.
Me, gotta put myself on the left, and then I'm going then I'm going with Clint, Landon, and y'all gonna kill me with this one.
Who?
I need a number 9 in my team because I'm going for a 3-4-3 system.
Okay.
So got three in the back. I got Steve on the right. I got, you know, Claudio as a defensive midfielder, but obviously he'll play a number 10 anyway. But
right.
With Christian or Landon right there, myself on the left, I got that. And then I got Clint or Landon or Christian on the wing. So they can go back and forth to 10 or a wing. Number nine, who you think I picked my number nine?
Man, I would have said Josie, but I'm thinking you're going to say McBride now.
No.
Your number nine's got to be – is it Wijnaldum?
I went with Wijnaldum.
Wow. Why?
Because I think like a true number nine, you know, obviously, you know, McBride is – you know, playing it up. I mean, I play with both of them. I play with Ronaldo too.
Josie's gonna kill you, bro.
Huh? Yo, no, Josie. Oh, did I put Josie in the lineup?
No.
Dude, I must have miscounted. Wait, one, two. Because I wrote it down. One, two, three, four, five, six.
It's Clint, and then Ronaldo up top. You got Claudio Pulisic, LD Beasley. You got Pope, Boca, Balboa, Stevie Cherundolo, and Howard. You left Josie out.
Oh, I did, didn't I? Let me change it. I'm going with Josie.
Yeah, of course. Okay. No offense to Wijnaldum.
Yeah. No offense to Eric. Yeah, because I play with Eric too. I play with Eric in Chicago.
I like your lineup. It's a decent lineup, and I'm sure it's going to make a lot of U.S. men's national team fans cry right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I wanted to, because obviously I think that the older generation, you know, I mean, they were good. They were good players. This is, you know, great players. You know,
listen,
what I'm saying? So
Eddie Pope,
because people only remember now. People only remember now. They remember now because of social media. They don't remember, you know, 20 years ago what the U.S. national team looked like and how the players played, you know, how they trained and how they, you know, went about their business. So for me, I got to, you know, pay homage to some of those guys that play. Because I look at players today and, you know, They were, if not, you know, more talented than players we have now. So I got to pay homage to some of the older guys for sure.
Yeah, Bees, I thank you for your time. I said it'd be an hour. We've done an hour, 30-something minutes, and we didn't get to talk about
the
2018 campaign. That'll be for some other time. I'm still upset because it could have been Penta World Cup for DeMarcus.
Yeah, Bees, man.
Five World Cups. I'm still upset.
Yeah, me too. I still have that memory. That memory will never be forgotten. That disappointing feeling that you felt, you know, we failed. End of the day, we failed. The one game to go through to the World Cup, and, you know, we failed. We didn't get it done. You can talk about what happened, coaches, the U.S. soccer as a whole, blah, 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 whatever. But the players on the field, we didn't get it done. And that feeling, you know, I think that was probably, obviously, that was the most disappointing, you know, part in my whole career. Not just going to my fifth, just going to a World Cup, you know, and have it one game, win, draw, and you go. And we didn't do it. So that all do with me, for real.
Yeah. Well, Beez, I thank you so much for your time, man. I could talk to you for hours. It's been that fun. I really
appreciate
you coming on, and hopefully there's more of these down in the future.
Yeah, for sure, man. Let me know. It was fun.
All right. Take care.
All right, Herb. Good seeing you, man.
I appreciate it, brother.
Yeah,
be well.
Ciao.